Off the ball with BetDaq.com, the sports betting exchange. Serious about sports 24/7. Every season, every sport, every team.
Aaron Smith again. Artie Sarvia stepping, holding it up, gives it back to Aaron Smith. Ben Smith! And in go the All Blacks again. And it was a Springbok boot, I think, but Aaron Smith opens up. Here he goes, Aaron Smith. Looks to hand it off, does to Artie Sarvia. And in goes the flanker. Off it goes to Crotty. Now quick hands required. Coles fires it away. And Whitelock scores. So Perinara waits. Off goes Perinara. Too easy.
Yeah, too easy kind of sums it up, really. So that was New Zealand beating South Africa by 41 points to 13 on Saturday. It's their fourth bonus point from four in the Rugby Championship. 24 tries in four games. So effectively, they have wrapped up the Rugby Championship with two games to go. We'll have Eddie O'Sullivan on the line in just a moment. Gavin Comiskey of the Irish Times is in the studio. We wanted to talk to you guys a bit about New Zealand last week and we ran out of time. So we're going to start with them this week ahead of the Pro 12 action. They are, frankly, as awesome as ever. They're closing in on their own record of 17 wins in a row. I know you caught some of this game. You've caught New Zealand across the Rugby Championship. What are we seeing here?
Yeah, well, it's the best rugby I've ever seen. So it's extremely compelling. Like, and I thought New Zealand, with a completely different team in the World Cup last year, was the best rugby I've ever seen. And this is superior. They've lost five of the best players of all time. Mm. Certainly McCaw is probably the best player of all time. Man Anu, Dan Carter, Tony Woodcock, Mielamu have all left. Sonny Bill Williams gone, torn Achilles, and Steve Hansen and Ian Foster and the All Black coaching ticket have rebuilt this awesome, colossal force of nature that are like, it's not comparable to anything I've seen before, because like Dane Coles is a hooker,
yeah,
who I think was second choice, arguably even third choice at the start, like until injury. Now everyone knows he was a quality hooker. Now he's their starting hooker again, and he threw three passes that most head halves can't throw. Certainly one of them, the third pass he threw for it, it all created tries.
He had three assists, yeah.
Yeah, the one of the offloads was just fantastic. The right-handed one for the third try he created. Genuinely, most out-halves in playing in this country can't do it. Maybe two or three can. Like, it's rugby from a different planet. Like,
are they playing in a similar style to the New Zealand team we saw at the World Cup?
Do you know what? I was actually looking at it today. When you see a lot of the fancy Munster try and there's a Connacht try on the weekend, there's a way they're playing that's kind of copying a lot of a Munster attack or a All Black attacking blueprint from a year or two ago. They're much more direct now because they have these men that they don't need to be fancy and skillful and all this stuff out the back. They have all of that, but a lot more of it is direct.
They're bigger men.
Yeah, and they have Beauden Barrett, who has become the best player in the world in the last couple of weeks our eyes. Oh, he's
right.
Just...
So this is Dan Carter's replacement at 10.
Yeah, and it was supposed to be Aaron Cruden, and then Aaron Cruden got a little injured, and Beauden Barrett's always been this guy who's come off the bench for the All Blacks for a good few years now, and he's got a brother coming up behind him who's 12 and who's bigger and everything. But Barrett's like, his stuff against Argentina was just unbelievable last week. He became the best out half in the world against Argentina a couple of weeks ago, but just the way he got hold of the game.
What kind of player is he? What does he do?
He can do everything. He's got a sprinter pace. He's got winger pace. His kicking is, I think his place kicking at the start of his career was a bit dodgy. He's got that up to the mark now. He's lightning. He is just electricity. He can offload. He looks slight, but he takes hits. His crossfield kicking game is on the money. He's just a wonderful rugby player.
Yeah.
I think, though, if we're talking about the All Blacks, what it's all about, it's a lot to do with Steve Hansen, okay? And Ian Foster, obviously, might be the heir apparent. Steve Hansen's going on again now. I think he's going to be the longest ever serving All Black coach, and certainly in modern times, because he's going to take them to the next World Cup.
Mm.
And he was an assistant there with Graham Henry beforehand. So he has been part of this thing for, God, is it be over 10 years by the time he's finished, certainly. During the World Cup, his press conferences, I loved them. They were compelling. They were so unlike anything I've ever been to before. Like, he was like, one of the questions he was asked for the World Cup final, cool as you like, he was like, what's your secret? What was your secret that your father, who was a great coach, ever told you? And he just looked at the guy and he goes, my dad used to always say, you get all your options from the opposition. And just left it. And he was like, yeah, you're going to have to go away and think about that
one,
aren't you?
Quite profound, really, yeah.
Yeah, he's the opposite to Joe in many ways, Joe Smith, who were both very good at dealing with the media and very obviously probably the two best coaches in the world right now. Like, for example, if you ask Steve Hansen about his after Richie McCaw, how do you replace Richie McCaw? And he just turned around and he went, Sam Kane is Richie McCaw's replacement long term. And he just, and then he turned around and he goes, and Ardie Sevilla will be Sam Kane's understudy, and Matt Todd will be our number three, and that's how we're going to work it. So like it was motivation in itself for the three men, because he goes, that's the pecking order, that's what we're doing, that's what we're going to invest in long term. And in Ardie Sevilla and Sam Kane, they've got two players who, the only way you can place the greatest player of all time is produce two world class sevens and mix and match them.
Yes.
But like, if you ask Joe, like for years you'd be asking Joe about the whole, you've gone with Ian Madigan on the bench now again, so is he the backup to Johnny Sexton? And Joe would never go. He goes, no, not necessarily. Ian's there because he covers loads of positions. And without even mentioning, he'd always mention Paddy Jackson.
Yeah, it's
down,
far less nailed down.
He'd go all the way down. And so he never, he does it the opposite way around.
Yeah.
Both successful, like, but it's just a very, they do their business differently. Like.
Yeah, Eddie, I know you've caught quite a bit in New Zealand over the last couple of weeks. So far from something approaching a World Cup hangover and missing the retirees, they seem to have propelled themselves onto a different level again. And the gap, if anything, is widening.
Yeah, but I'm not surprised. I was talking about Hansen. I know Hansen from his days in Wales. He took over from Graham Henry. He hadn't huge success with Wales because he spent most of his time changing the culture around the Welsh team. He wasn't happy with the culture when he took over from Henry, and he basically rewired the whole thing, and it was a slow process, but he knows what he wants, and he's a very straight talker. I mean, he doesn't care what other people think about what he says. He has his opinions. You can take it or leave it. But he's an honest broker, you know. I always had a good relationship with him, and I enjoyed his company and had a few beers with him many times. He's kind of old school in that sense. But he would create a culture around a team that's pretty uncompromising, but guys would know where they stand. And that's why he talks very directly and very openly. He's not going to say anything in public he wouldn't say in private, and probably vice versa, you know.
Mm.
So he's he has that kind of, I suppose, that directness about him. And then again, you know, he probably has the best playing pool in the world to pick from, to be fair. You know, in terms of talent, in terms of conveyor belts, New Zealand rugby ticks all the boxes. But he does get best value out of it. I mean, the funny part about them is, I think they're not the best defence in the world, but they're just so good with the ball. I mean, their accuracy is just breathtaking. I mean, on the weekend they haven't had any line breaks. They're only 12 line breaks. They got 6 tries. That's extraordinary conversion rate, you know. And their ability to pin and pass across the field, whether it's a forward or a back, it doesn't matter. They can pin and pass, which is a kind of a skill that went out of the game, and they've brought it back. And everybody's trying to kind of emulate that now on these short sides where, you know, you've got 5 attackers, 3 defenders, and you pin the three defenders and you go around the corner. And they're very, very good at that. And their set-piece game is very solid. The defence system's interesting because the way their attack works on a kind of a play-what's-in-front-of-you basis, which they're probably the only team in the world can really do that. Their defence is similar as well. Players do make individual decisions and they try and read off each other, which is kind of not normally the way you defend. And as a consequence, they are vulnerable defensively, but it doesn't matter if you're scoring that many points. You can afford to leak a couple of tries. And, you know, you saw Argentina gave them a lot of trouble going up the guts against them. Got in behind them a couple of times. So, you know, their defence isn't the best defence in the world.
Okay.
But I think certainly their attack is so good that it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. And do you agree with Gavin that they're playing maybe a more direct style than we saw in the World Cup? They've bigger men now?
I think it's just got a good balance. You see, they're so smart. If you spread out against them, they go through you. And if you play tight around the breakdowns, they go around you. And they have this, like, I probably thought the best kind of masterclass we saw from the All Blacks in a long time was when they beat Ireland in the stadium in that game where Ireland just got all of the blocks. And actually, you know, really exploited some defensive frailties in the All Blacks and, you know, got 3 tries on the board. And in that game, they tried to throw the ball around in the first half, and we got into them and we upset them and we forced them into errors. And they just circled the wagons. They tightened up their game. They went very direct, particularly, you know, in the middle quarters of the game. And then at the end of the third quarter, when we were a bit wobbly from all the collisions, they just changed their game and they went wide again and they had us in trouble. And their final try was a masterclass in playing a wide pattern, which Connacht has played, which Ireland has played years ago. But they were able to adjust out of a narrower pattern into a wider pattern. And to have that capacity to change in a game, during a game, to change your shape completely, And that's gone back a few years. I thought it was extraordinary. Mm. And it was required to win that game. And, of course, you have the skill set to do that. It's all right to be talking about playing out of the shapes. But, you know, there's no point in trying to cash checks or you can't write, you know. So yeah. they have the ability as well.
Eddie, have you ever seen a better scrum half than Aaron Smith?
No, I mean, he is. But, again, you have to contextualise. I mean, the quality of their continuity game is extraordinary. Like, it's usually on a play from. You really have to dig a ball out of the back. But he's a very, very smart scrum half. He's very, very aware of what's going on around him. He knows when to take the quick tap. He knows when to slow it down. He knows when to change the direction of play. And his service is very, very accurate. When he decides to pass, it's like it's on a rope. Mm. And the last guy they had who was like that was Perry Whipple, who was a phenomenally smart footballer. So, you know, they've got those kind of guys pulling the strings. And certainly Bowden Barrett has, you know, kind of came out of the blocks and stepped into that role and is kind of bossing things. Now, mind you, again, I suppose his weakness is off the ground. He's not a world-class place kicker at the moment. Not saying he couldn't become one, but he has a tendency to miss very kickable kicks. And the All Blacks are always the type of team that just keep the scoreboard ticking over. You give them three, they'll take it. Take another three and they'll just drift away from you. But, Barrett, again, is really it's hard to see anybody at the moment is playing better rugby than him at 10, but it's a complete package, you know. They are just in a seam of form at the moment, and it's unfortunate for the rugby championship because it's all about who wins second place now.
Yeah,
and there is no better, Joe. They've got the second best scrum half in the world as well in TJ Perenara. So when they have the second best, they have three of the best locks in the world. They have two of the best open sides in the world. It's frightening depth.
Yeah, I was looking through the New Zealand press, and even they're starting to think, I wonder how good for the game this is, this widening gap between New Zealand and everyone else. Are the other teams in the Rugby Championship gap going backwards? Like South Africa, Australia, Argentina. What have we seen from them?
Australia are in a bad way. They hadn't won a game since the World Cup semi-final until they scraped past South Africa last week. They are not in good shape at all. The team that Cheka built has kind of not really moved on. It's the opposite, actually. South Africa, yeah, even their coach said that we haven't transitioned at all from the World Cup.
Right.
Argentina looked pretty good. But South Africa, their pack, there's the bones of a big, huge, monstrous South African pack growing there, but they've got problems in too many areas of the field.
Yeah, well, the context is there are 15 games unbeaten, 17 is the record, which is held by New Zealand and South Africa jointly. So presumably they'll match that record over the next couple of weeks and then look to extend it against us, which we'll be talking about. We'll park New Zealand for the moment. Mm. We would possibly, if rain hadn't interfered, Gavin, be talking about Connacht first this evening, having lost to Treviso and being in full-blown crisis here. They were down at half-time when the game was called off.
Yeah, they were down 22-10 and they were getting stuffed by what is seemingly the worst professional team in this part of the world anyway. You know, Zebra have been rock bottom for a long time now, and they were overpowered for three tries in the first half. They scored a nice Connacht try themselves. It was you've seen it before, Muldoon off the top of a line out, Bundy Aki decoy out the back to, I think Jack Carty was playing 10, reverse pass to their winger, all very pretty, created a 4-on-1, scored this lovely try. But the three tries they conceded was the same problems they've been having, where they are getting bashed out of it, and their defence is just clinging on. If you go through them, there's so many things that are wrong. Afterwards, Pat Lamb said there was some really good stuff out there, and I think we would have responded if we had got out into that second half and all that. They got hammered here, so they did, and they got out of jail, because if it's less than 60 minutes, the game doesn't stand. So we should be looking at them now, like something clocking up to having conceded 100 points in three games and having three defeats. I think they got Scarlets next, and on what we've seen so far, they're in for a world of pain there.
So no major improvement on what we were saying last Monday?
No. They scored a lovely try and there was little bits and pieces, but all the stuff you've seen from Connacht are grand, but it's completely useless if your halfbacks can't get you into the air. If your pack, for starters, can't win, this is the basics of rugby, can't get you into the other opposition territory, and the control from your halfbacks. They need Marmion back. They need that out half that they've signed from South Africa. And if they don't get them on the field soon, the season will be over and it'll be back to one of those nightmarish Connacht seasons that we thought we would got past.
Yeah. Eddie Leinster, on the other hand, came out and put 33 points on Edinburgh away from home, which looked like a really good performance. They strengthened the pack. They had five changes in the forwards, all internationals. Leo Cullen talking about how, you know, much improved and everything else. What did you see from Leinster?
Well, I thought was a bizarre game because they were 26-8 up at half time, and you know they were only 6 points up going into the last minute of the game, and then they scored again. So there was this big fallow period in the middle where they just really did nothing. They left Edinburgh back into the game. The second half territory in possession was 80% for territory in possession to Edinburgh, which is like, you know, when you're in that position, you would think Leinster leading 4 tries at half time, just put the foot down and just rip Edinburgh apart, who are not a particularly good side. You know, I don't think they're really, really up to much and probably bit mid table at the end of the season. So you think Leinster would, you know, a few guys back, and they were just going to rip it up. And they just went into sleep or something, and then they compounded by having another nightmare defensively. You know, they had a shocking number of missed tackles again, like in the low 80% again. And I mean, you just kind of wonder on the defensive side of the football against bigger and better teams in Europe, if they don't start fixing that, they're going to get probably chopped up a fair bit. Now, they got chopped up a bit last year as well in a couple of matches. They got chopped up in the Pro 12 final. They got chopped up by Wasps over in Coventry. So, you know, it's something that's been kind of alarm bells in the background for a while. And it's hard to know, like, you've got guys missing tackles, which is a huge problem. It's hard to imagine guys are missing tackles and they're not up for the contact. These are professional players. You know, shouldn't be an issue. I don't think it's an issue. For some reason, they don't seem to have a clear system in their head. And a lot of times you miss tackles, guys are not in position to make them, and then they slip off and trying to make them. But it's just the same. I saw no improvement on last week for their tackle count and their execution. And they are good with the ball. You know, they are capable. I mean, Ringrose, again, was the front guy. He had the biggest impact with the ball. And Jimmy Heaslip had a good game on both sides of the football, to be fair to him. But they look good with the ball. But they're not going to be able to get through the season against the big guns if they're not going to be able to shut up shop, and they have to. I mean, that's a concern. I mean, they knew Curt McQuilkin was leaving by the last minute, but they brought in Graham Henry to help, and they now have Stuart Lancaster, but the defence isn't getting any better, and I think that's a genuine problem if they don't fix it, and they need to fix it soon.
Stuart Lancaster was standing in the press box at Murrayfield behind Leo and Girvan, kind of observing the coaches as much as he was observing the players. Like, so he's still figuring out his senior coaching, mentoring role or whatever that is. There was one good thing. Eddie was right about Jamie Heaslip, all right, but it was Dan Levy. Looks like he's ready to go. He's 22 now. He's like, this kid, this was like one of the best schoolboys you'll ever see. Ferocious, and he's got to that man strength size now. I think he's done 5 turnovers. One of the most turnovers. He's a 7. He's keeping Van der Flyer off the team.
What age is he?
22 now. Okay. So they're all around the same age. Levy's been injured a lot since he left school, but like as soon as he was fit, he was made Irish 20s captain. Like, this guy. I don't want to be like heaping him up and hyping him up too much, but he is kind of, you've always looked like coming up through the ranks to, like, if Paul O'Connell was a flanker, this is what he'd look like, this is how he'd play. Now, if he can stay injury free, it was definitely the huge positive was him, and a couple of other little bits and pieces out of the game. Like, again, Heaslip looks like he's gearing himself up to go on a third lines tour already. Game one he was really direct.
Yeah. And Sexton set to come back next Friday, we're hearing. And Munster then went away to the Dragons and won by 4 points. Blendahl and Murray back, your boy, he was there.
Tyler had a good game. I actually realised he's 26 now.
If Tyler stays injury free, is he the boy? Is he the guy?
He has to be. He has to be. There's a guy called Bill Johnson who's coming up through the ranks in Munster, who was Irish 20s again last year, injured, just had surgery, so he's away back and he's a few years off maybe. But they brought in this guy to be their 10-12 or whatever he is. He looks like he is an out half. He's just missed 2 years with injuries. He was the New Zealand under-20s captain, 6'1", 15 stone, from the Canterbury School of Excellence, where Carter, Mertens, all these guys. There was a little bit rusty, but there's a bit of a Rolls-Royce out half in there if he can get up to speed and stay fit.
And Munster generally, Eddie?
I thought, you know, they got the job done, but they've cast it on over the Dragons when they wanted it, but they failed to drive it home. The defence has improved a good bit on last week, but the fact that they really ended up kind of sneaking home by 4 points against a team that they were well capable of putting to bed early on, you'd have to wonder about it, you know, that they're still not really in their stride.
Yeah, because Razzy Erasmus said afterwards, we're mainly just guts and work rate at the moment. That's kind of what we are, but that's only going to get us so far. We've an awful lot to do here.
Big South African look good.
That's a fair assessment. You know, it's an honest assessment, I think, because like they really didn't look like that they were. They looked at times like they were capable, but they didn't deliver. It was just a bit like we're Ulster at the moment. You know, there's this frustration that you think they should be winning by more. You think they should be putting more daylight between themselves and the opposition. They don't. And they were lucky in the end. You know, Darren Sweeten made a complete horlicks of that try. Yeah. And he lost the ball in the in-goal area trying to get around behind the posts.
Yeah.
And, you know, luckily the ball broke his way and Kean Bohan got on it. But, like, that was really... They could have lost that game, you know. And if you'd leave, you know, the Dragons scratching your head saying, how the hell did we lose that game? They could have lost it. And again... They were on their goal line the last play of the game to you know, a try would have lost in the game, but the Dragons knocked on the ball. Like, there was a kind of a few moments when the final whistle went. They should never have been in that position. Mm. And I think Erasmus has been honest. Yeah, there's a lot of guts and grit at the moment, but that's not going to get them too far, you know, against the better teams. And certainly in Europe, they're going to have to come up a notch in terms of you know, execution. But I don't see that at the moment, and the clock is ticking. Now, if they get everybody on deck, you know, everyone's fit and well, you know, they have a lot of experience on the field, but they're still work in progress, no doubt about that.
Yeah, we've neglected Ulster last week and probably time against us now this week, although I saw Gavin, the Scarlets coach, Wayne Pivach, saying that they have the best player in the Pro 12 in Piatow.
Yeah, he did this. Did you see this amazing thing he did in the game? So I only just caught the highlights myself. There was a couple of interesting things about it, but Scarlets broke through 3-on-1, Piatow being the last man, and he leaned in to pretend to tackle the ball carrier to commit himself. Your man threw a pass and he read it and intercepted it and put Craig Gilroy 80 metres down pitch. He's the best. He would be probably in the All Blacks team. It would be either him or Israel Dagg on the right wing now, I'd say, if he was back there. Mm. The way he left was he was just on the border of becoming a regular All Black. He was playing a lot and then he just missed out on selection for the World Cup and hit the road. Or it was the other way around. He hit the road just before he missed out on selection.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, he's absolutely class there.
But you have to worry about Ulster, though. Like, he's class. And like, Gilroy had a big game. Ludwig had a big game. McCluskey had a big game.
Ian Henderson's back, yeah.
Yeah, but they were delivered out for 20 minutes and they didn't score again until 70 minutes. With a penalty. So, like, they spent, you know, basically 15 minutes without scoring, and they were dominating Scarlets and everywhere, you know, dominating them in terms of meters carried, in terms of passes. But they're not turning to scores. And their backs are, Ulster are using their backs as their main playmakers and their main go forward. And that's sensible. They have a very good back line. Mm. But, you know, you really, when you have that sort of dominance against an average team of the Scarlets, you need to drive it home. Because that when you play a bigger and better team in Europe, you won't get that sort of dominance against the big teams. So your conversion rate has to go up, or you're not going to convert. You won't have too many chances to convert. And, you know, Ulster are a very frustrating team. They've been like this for a number of years. They look fantastic for 20 minutes and then they go off the boil. And it's still a ball game with 10 minutes to go, and it should never happen, you know. And they, for some reason, they have some really good players, and P2 again has really brought an extra edge to it. But I just thought that their dividend for their work on the weekend was very little, and they should have, again, had that game wrapped up and put to bed and cruising with 20 minutes to go.
Eddie, thanks very much.
Okay.
Cheers. Gavin Comiskey of the Irish Times. Thanks for coming in.
Off the Ball with BetDAC.com. The sports betting exchange. Serious about sports 24/7. Every season, every sport, every team.